Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. And today we are going to talk about Christmas dinner with dogs, of course. Now that most of us are home for a couple weekends, even the most diehard of competitors, we can relax, restore, rest up, recharge, all that good stuff. The Christmas and New Year's holidays give us a chance to take stock of the year past and plan for the one we've got coming up. For me, Christmas and Thanksgiving are my very favorite holidays of the year. I'm all about the food and the family and the friends who become family. So that always includes the dogs, right? Usually a whole bunch of them mucking about underfoot while we're cooking and while we're eating. And my friends and family, we exchange a few, you know, little gifts at Christmas, but mostly we're just there to hang out and eat. It's the eating part. And the dogs help us eat, right? So just like dog shows, the profusion of cable cooking shows have turned chefs and dog handlers into celebrities. But the reality is anyone can do this. So just to give you a little encouragement in this area, okay, I'm going to give you a brief tour of my own cooking history. I have many friends and family who are trained professional chefs. I, on the other hand, learned at the school of, well, hell, dog won't eat it either. So this is where I got started. Growing up in Southern Oregon in the 70s and 80s in a one earner household of four meant that my mom had to be very, very creative in her food budget. And I was raised on home cooking, home canning, wild game and garden produce. That's what we had. Chicken from the store was like a special treat, okay? Lamb chops were a once-a-year birthday dinner. And Mom and Grandma were the cooks, and I was shooed out of the kitchen. We got milk from a friend down the road. Came in gallon glass jars with about 3 inches of heavy cream on top. My kitchen skill as a small child was to literally skim the cream from the milk using my tin baby cup. Mom used that cream to make butter and like the richest, most amazing sauces you have ever tasted. I can still remember. I was very proud of my ability to get all of the chunks of cream off the milk, leaving just the whole milk for drinking with dinner. Now, my mom was ridiculously good at this sort of like pioneer lifestyle, particularly considering she'd been raised in a very urban setting. This was kind of a big deal. She even made her own soap from Lindered lard and lye. She butchered, trimmed, and cut all of our wild game meats, deer and elk and you name it. She made Chinese food, even homemade egg rolls. I learned how to use chopsticks even before I used a fork. She canned everything, anything you could name. But fast forward, you know, life after college, my refrigerator typically had pickles, ketchup, and beer. That's what I had. If I was really lucky, I'd have peanut butter and bread. I was working for a weekly newspaper as a reporter, and my before-tax income was like $1,000 a month. My father quite literally laughed at me and informed me that a college education meant I was supposed to be able to eat something besides peanut butter and jelly. Ha! That's all I knew how to cook. I was good. So as life trundled on, I had more money and less money, and I ate out and I ate in, and I got pretty good at scrambled eggs and tuna fish sandwiches. I sort of learned to cook by doing it, but I had a real ace in the hole because I could call my mom anytime and ask her what to do. One of my most treasured possessions to this day is a cookbook of my mom's old recipes, food that I grew up eating. and Mom hand wrote every single one of these recipes. And I've sort of added to it over the years, recipes that I cut out or I printed out or I sort of made up. I would rescue that book from a house fire. It means a lot to me. During those sort of lost years I spent in Nebraska, good meals at restaurants were both very difficult to find and impossible to afford. And I did a lot of cooking. And that's when I did most of my trial and a whole lot of error when it came to cooking. For example, the carrot cake that had baking soda instead of baking powder. Yeah, P.S. that's a bad idea. At any rate, the point I'm sort of rambling toward here is that anyone can learn to make simple, healthy, fresh, whole food meals. Literally, if I can do it, you can do it. And P.S., you can learn to show your dog, too. So, while we're on the topic of learning, this podcast really is about dogs. As dog handlers go, much like cooks, there are two schools of thought. And I describe this as the classical music conductor and the jazz pianist. Okay? Classical music cook and dog handler are those individuals who pay exquisite attention to detail. They are beautifully prepared and outfitted. And these outstanding folks, they handle every situation carefully by the numbers. And they make very, very few mistakes, whether it's in the ring or in the kitchen. And their results, while not necessarily, you know, exciting, are very satisfying and genuinely successful. They can make a picture better than anyone, and they never, never have an unforced error. On the other hand, the jazz pianist cooks and dog handlers were a bit fewer and farther between. We lean towards the flamboyant. There's good bones, if you will, in terms of technique, and we never take a chance with safety, but we're much more willing to go out on a limb. In the kitchen, there is no such tomfoolery as measuring. Certainly much of anything. It's all sort of gut instinct. It's a pinch of this and a dash of that and taste it and a little more of this other thing. And when it comes to the show ring, handlers of this school are much more likely to, I don't know, take a knee or make that big gesture. We are often, I have found, the handlers who will enable the more challenging dogs to shine. We work with them rather than putting them into a mold that's comfortable for the handler. As cooks, we sometimes have crunchy rice episodes. Yes, this is a topic for another day. It's happened to me. As handlers, that grand gesture in the jazz pianist mold can have unintended consequences. I think of bouncing the bait off the nose of the dog that was still learning how to catch directly into the path of the dog moving on the down and back on the green carpet at the garden. Yep, yep, that's what happens. So errors in judgment when you're the jazz pianist type of handler and or cook are a thing. So for the last couple of years, trained chef and dog handler Anthony Cantor and I have had sort of this Bobby Flay style barbecue throwdown at one of our Pacific Northwest summer shows that sort of highlights this exact compare and contrast of style. Currently, we're tied 1-1. I'm just saying, Anthony, throwdown's coming. This year, tiebreaker. All right. So as you work up your Christmas dinner menu and you think about your plans and your goals for next year's dog show season, think about ways that you fall into one of these categories and maybe practice pulling something from the other school of thought that might help you with a current dog. There's a lot there to offer. And sometimes a helping hand from somebody who thinks a little bit differently is a good thing. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. All right, crew. Last month, I was filling you in on the Trupanion Breeder Support Program. And in case you missed it, this is a free program for breeders that lets us offer our buyers, our puppy buyers, a go-home day offer. so that they can try out Trupanion and everybody has the peace of mind that that puppy is covered in case of any kind of an incident. But I was talking to Haran recently, and I didn't realize at the time that they actually have a breeding rider that is additional to the regular healthcare coverage that Trupanion offers our dogs. And so I wanted to bring Haran Greer from Trupanion back to tell us about it, because I was blown away. So welcome, Haran.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for having me back. And I'm happy this came up in conversation.
Yeah, right? So tell us about it. This is pretty incredible to me.
Yeah, so I'll just start at the basics. You know, so if you join Trupanion, we just have one simple plan. It's 90% coverage for the unexpected illnesses, accidents, and injuries. And then from there, breeders can add a breeding rider coverage to make sure that they're protected from the unexpected things that can happen with breeding.
Okay, so what does that cover? What kind of things are you covering in your claims with the breeding rider?
So it's truly things that are unexpected. So anything that you can't plan for in advance is what Trupanion gives you peace of mind from, right? But with the breeding rider, you know, the most common claim that we see are for C-sections.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was looking through, I was curious just to see what kind of claims we have been seeing in the past year. I was surprised that pyometra payouts have exceeded what we've paid out for C-section.
Wow.
So the claims paid ranged from the lowest one that we paid out was $1,740, and the highest one to date this year has been $5,500.
That's pretty incredible. So how much does a person pay to add that breeding rider to their regular insurance coverage?
So that rider has variables. You'll want to give us a call or go to our website. The factors are things like where you live, what breed you have, is it a male or female, how old are they, and then the deductible. And those
right.
deductible options is where, you know, the flexibility comes in
mm-hmm.
for your monthly payment. And those range from $0 to $1,000.
Okay, beautiful. So check it out, listeners, puredogtalk.com. You can find the Trupanion website. Just click that logo and it will take you in to get lots and lots of information about some stuff that I think not all of us always think about. So thank you, Haran. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Laura. I hope to be back on soon.
So now, for the meat and potatoes, as they say, of this episode, I'm sharing with you a Christmas dinner menu from my home a few years ago. And this is complete with appetizer right through dessert, and everything from fancy to soothing. Okay, these recipes are actually on my Auntie Laura Facebook page. I know, it's all another thing. Sadly lacking in current updates, I'm just way too busy to keep up on posting to it, but there's some good stuff there. Feel free to check it out if you're looking for inspiration, parties, feeding a huge family on a budget, holiday meals, whatever it is. A little something there for everybody. So the other thing that you need to keep in mind when we're having Christmas dinner with dogs is that all events held in the homes of dog lovers everywhere will feature a little bit extra protein. We sometimes call that dog hair. And somewhere along the way, it's gonna happen. Nobody ever died from it. Just enjoy the love from our four-legged family, politely and quietly. Remove the hair and keep on eating. I promise you're not gonna get ptomaine from dog hair. So the starting dish at every single one, family feast in my entire life is Grandma's clam dip. Whether I made it, my mom made it, my grandmother made it, my brother made it, my father made it, everybody made Grandma's clam dip. It's simple and it's soothing and it's satisfying. And there's a recipe for it here in the blog post. But straight up, we're talking sour cream, cream cheese, lemon juice, minced clams, dried onions, and a little bit of Worcestershire. Poof, easy peasy. Lemon squeezy, literally. The secret is to blend the cream cheese and sour cream very thoroughly with the lemon juice and the clam juice. You have to use a hand blender, you know, an old-fashioned egg beater. And you do that and get it nice and smooth before you add the clams and the dried onions. Very important, make this appetizer piece ahead, the day ahead. Let it sit overnight so those flavors blend. It's always better the next day. Even more important than this, though, is that For the full, authentic Grandma's House experience, you must serve the clam dip with only Ruffles potato chips. So there you go. So the menu that I'm sharing, and as I said, all these recipes are on the blog post, so you can go look at the website and figure it out. That particular year, we had herbed leg of lamb with oven-roasted root vegetables, Moroccan beets with mint, winter fruit salad, and a chocolate coconut pie. It was delicious. But in the make the picture category, think about, as you're putting Christmas dinner together, think about design and print a beautiful menu to share with your guests. Just feels very special. Put your dog's picture on it so that everybody knows that this is a family affair. This particular year, that leg of lamb was on sale for a very reasonable price. And I strongly recommend, if you can do it, if you're in a position to do it, hook up with a local farmer. Get the best lamb, get your best meats that way if you can find a local farmer or rancher who's able to provide you with that. Root vegetables, you know what? They can be mixed and matched. I had potatoes and carrots and onions, but you can have parsnips. You can have anything you want in that category. So with the idea of like lamb and root vegetables and that feel going on, I decided on adding Moroccan spiced beets with mint. Oh my God, they were amazing. And then sort of a palate cleansing salad of winter fruit on a bed of butter lettuce. But the pièce de résistance, honestly, gluten-free chocolate silk pie in a chocolate coconut crust with homemade whipped cream. Oh yeah. We all know holidays, dessert especially, are always a challenge when we're working with dietary needs and all that kind of stuff. This let us have, you know, a sweet treat that didn't bust the diet, the budget, or the gut, frankly. So with all of that said, let me just leave you with this one final piece, a wish list for Santa from a delusional but typical dog person. Tongue firmly planted in cheek, just to be sure everybody knows. Dear Santa, this year I would like a perfect dog. This dog would have a beautiful front assembly, a two-finger shoulder lay-on, and a proper brisket, 90-degree angles fore and aft, a rock-solid top line, a big lick side gate, and a pendulum down and back. A head and eye to die for, perfect coat, dripping in breed type, and P.S., if it isn't too much to ask for, could you make him a hella show dog? Okay, that'd be great. I'd also like to have money, gobs and gobs of money, to spend on this gift from heaven, promoting him to the ends of the earth, paying for a top-tier professional handler, and covering entries at every dog show every weekend so we can cherry-pick, you know, the competition. And P.P.S., if it isn't too big a request, maybe a personal plane. So that way my perfect dog doesn't get a bad rep for flying as a service dog. Okay, that'd be great. So number three on Santa's wish list, a very long list of judges who read and understand the standard as it is written, not whatever's being told to them by the people with their own great dog, who doesn't look anything like my great dog. Just saying. Lots of friends in high places would be number four on my list, who will whisper in important ears about the second coming of dogdom, which might be attending the show in question, but, you know, it's all on the down low, since nobody really knows where this mythical being will show up next. Beautiful, sunshiny weather, number five on my Santa's list. Not too hot, not too cold. At every dog show we decide to attend, indoors or outdoors. If you could arrange some nice restaurants nearby, that'd be a cherry on the top. Okay, number six, pole position parking at every single dog show. None of this three rows back crap. I want to be front and center. Number seven, I'd really like to have my own personal paparazzi photographer for my great dog so that he is never, ever seen on social media looking like a schmuck. That'd be cool. Okay, thanks. Number eight, really like to have all brand new shiny tack if we could swing it. Crates, tables, X-Pens, wheels, scissors, brushes, dryer. You know, mine are kind of beat up. 25 years of this, they're showing their age, so I'm saying. Number 9, a brand new dogmobile. That's for the days that we decide to drive to a dog show. If we could make this dogmobile super shiny with tons of room and preferably get 30 miles a gallon, that'd be great, Santa. And finally, a nice padded cell at the funny farm, because clearly anyone who thinks they have the perfect representative of their breed needs some long-term counseling. Y'all have a wonderful, happy, merry holiday of your choosing. Laugh, love, treasure, and never ever forget that life is ridiculously short. Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the Supers desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.